This is a People First Radio podcast.
On the first half of today's program, we heard speakers from events held in Nanaimo and Victoria to mark International Overdose Awareness Day on August 31st. Heather McDonald and Shane Steinhauer were at the event in Nanaimo. McDonald works with AVI Nanaimo, a community organization with a mission to promote health, dignity, and well-being for all people affected by HIV, hepatitis C, and substance use. McDonald and Steinhauer have also collaborated on a grassroots outreach program called Nightkeepers. The two of them met up with me in the CHLY studio to debrief this year's International Overdose Awareness Day event in Nanaimo.
Hi, I'm Shane. I'm a representative of Nightkeepers, which is an outreach at night.
My name is Heather. I'm a peer outreach worker in Nanaimo as well, and I am partners with Shane in Nightkeepers and working in community as well.
And thank you both very much for being here. We're at CHLY this weekend. We were all not too far from here downtown at Diana Krall Plaza for International Overdose Awareness Day, Nanaimo's event. What do you think people, first of all, maybe what were your big takeaways from that gathering, that event here in Nanaimo?
My takeaway is the politicians need to start stepping up and actually coming to the events and speaking in public and letting us know their outlook on it, because every Awareness Day, they've never shown up. They've never sent the representative to speak on their behalf or say anything. So it'd be nice if the politicians could actually let us know what their real thought is on this instead of being in the background of it.
So we heard speeches from MP Lisa Marie Barron, MLA Sheila Malcolmson. It was actually a little bit contentious. Some of the other speakers talked about the idea of like politicizing the event. I don't know, Shane, what did you make of some of the speeches you heard maybe from the MLA, the MP?
I thought they were truthful to a certain extent. It would have been nice to have the mayor. Maybe next time he could show up instead of saying he's busy all the time. If he really cares about the situation that's going on, he'd make time for it. Like Sheila Malcolmson and the other person, they made time to come down out of their day because it was a weekend. So I'm pretty sure the mayor could do that too if he really felt compassionate about the whole situation that's going on.
And with the date being regular, being annual, perhaps we get an extended invitation earlier, but I think maybe next year, 2025, August 31st will stay on his radar to come and recognize the people we've lost and the importance of how it affects the community as a whole.
Can you tell me how has this been impacting the community here in Nanaimo?
I really feel empathetic with what our community's been going through. The rate of loss and the amount of sort of different facets of community that are affected is pretty overwhelming. Children's friends are passing. So a lot of the deaths we're experiencing are people in their young teens. The statistics that BC shows are as young as 10 that we're losing to overdose. And sometimes these circumstances are children who are trying drinking and combining with a pharmaceutical the very first time and are being taken too soon. There's so many individuals who work hard in, for example, trades, younger individuals who end up with workplace injuries that require medications that are very addictive and are entering street supply when their prescriptions expire. Those individuals are at very high risk of overdose. There's so many young parents or parents in general. One of my coworkers was presenting to an elementary school class about Narcan, learning about the dangers, I guess, of drugs to a grade 7 class. And in that one class, three of the students who had already lost a parent to overdose. So it's really so incredibly impactful. Shane and I, in the work we do, are losing friends more than one a week. I think in the last week we lost four people in community that we know really well, and then I heard of a fifth while we were at the event. Statistically, it's just astronomical in comparison to things such as COVID that we with the COVID deaths. That was something Dr. Bonnie Henry was announcing daily on the news, and that's something we've really begged the medical health officer to consider, is taking these deaths as serious and starting to make the public more aware that this is not a rare occurrence. It's not affecting only the street entrenched. It's affecting people who casually use drugs as well. And at some circumstance, those individuals may be more at risk because they're closeting their use. They're not exposed to outreach where they can receive safe harm reductions, clean harm reduction supplies. They might feel more stigma about sharing their needs, so they're accessing services less frequently.
You mentioned there that five people you know in the community, you found out in the week of the event, had died from this. Is there anything you can, that you're able to and open to sharing with me? Maybe even just like remembering those people.
It's hard to remember with so many people dying. Like, it's hard to keep track of who's dying and stuff like that. And it's been very impactful on me because they're close friends of mine. And it's happening too common for people to die and nobody's saying anything about it. Like, even in the obituaries, their names ain't brought up. It's like it's thrown under a rug on when people die. And that's pretty sad because they're someone's son, mom, daughter, auntie, uncle. They're loved by someone out there, but yet there's no public knowledge of how many people are dying or really who their names are to be remembered by. So it's all the people that died, they were all somebody at one time. And they had to get injured at work or start taking medication, and then they get cut off by the doctor, and then they got to go to the very toxic drug supply on the street, and it's like Russian roulette. You never know if this is going to be your first time or your last time. And most people that start coming to get this drug supply on the street, it's usually their last time because it's so strong out there, and people don't tell you what's in it. You're coming to get what you need to get better or not feel pain. Well, you never know. Like, there's so many different types of stuff that could be out there, and some are strong, some are lethal, and a very low number that they're killing people with it, not knowing, because people want strong supply out there because they're getting used to it. And with the stronger the supply, the death rate goes up percentage-wise, probably 80%. The death rate happens with people that are just becoming users. And even veteran users are not prone to this dying. Everybody is like playing Russian roulette. You never know when your time is going to be in. It don't matter what kind of substance you're using, because it's all in every substance. So just got to be cautious and not use alone, because using alone, your life expectancy could be cut short real quick, and no one's there to save you or be there to help you through the time of need if you OD.
I just wanted to thank you, Joe, for bringing up about the individuals that have been lost. And if you don't mind, I'll just touch on a few individuals without naming names, just to kind of give a little bit of context. There was an amazing person who is a member of the Snanaimo community here, very well loved, who was very active in helping resuscitate others. They were always there to provide harm reduction supplies for others. We were all deeply saddened by their loss, very sudden loss recently. The Snanaimo community also lost an amazing artist who has some pieces in downtown Nanaimo here. Very sudden, very tragic loss. And I'm thinking of an individual who was seeking safe supply, was not able to access it because there's I believe it's 3 doctors in town. There's a very limited amount of access to safe supply. Those doctors work extremely hard to get patients something prescribed that's non-fatal. So this individual was seeking safe supply, but in the event that they were not able to get it, they stayed with their parent. And when they relapsed the first time they used, they didn't survive. Another individual I'm thinking of had pre-existing health conditions. They were a very caring member of community who was very well loved by many of the agencies in town. They were just looking at helping teach graphic design to literacy in Nanaimo. They were just about to get housed, but they were struggling with getting prescription for an pre-existing health condition. So they were lost, which is, I took some time off of work, and so did others. With that loss, we really missed that individual. There was an individual who regularly cleaned at the outreach pharmacy as a role, a very well-loved guy on the street there. We miss him very much. And someone who passed last year who we all loved in community, who did a bunch of street cleaning, very caring, jovial guy. So, you know, it's all individuals that really care. Many of these individuals are trying hard. I think the sentiment sometimes can be misconstrued as that someone's not trying hard enough to connect with resources. But what we need is safe supply availability. We need more overdose prevention sites and more supervised consumption, particularly peer models that really welcome like-minded individuals to somewhere that they feel welcome. We need more housing. We need like the Heart and Hearth program through BC Housing that is meant to mandate supporting individuals that are in encampments. We need more links to treatment and detox, more beds. Sometimes when the new beds become available in the media, it will look great, but they're replacing beds that already exist. So they're still extremely limited in Nanaimo. So yeah, someone can ask for treatment and it can take months to get there. And yeah, I really appreciate you like helping us shed some light on the circumstance so that we can all work together to help bring more compassion to this really epidemic tragedy that seems to be, when someone's street entrenched particularly, it really feels as if Nanaimo doesn't care, the government doesn't care, that we all know what should happen and what could happen, and it's not happening. The city particularly seems to be behind some other cities, like I'd recognize Kelowna as being very progressive. Also, Cowichan Valley is very progressive in the initiatives that they're putting forth to create more housing, more safe supply, and more supervised consumption.
This is People First Radio. I'm Joe Pugh. My guests are Heather McDonald and Shane Steinhauer. We're debriefing the event held in Nanaimo to mark International Overdose Awareness Day, August 31st. I get the sense that you're very focused on like solutions and things to like change the situation so that it doesn't feel like next August 31st we're having the same event, only now more people have died. But how do you, I don't know, like how do you keep going and push through that after, you know, sharing all of those stories of people that you knew and your loss, their loss must impact the community like so much. Like, how do you keep going through that?
There's not enough support for peers that are grieving, that's for sure, because we're all grieving and trying to keep working. And once you become involved, there's so much volunteer work that's hoped of you. So it's pretty draining.
It's hard to keep going, pushing forward. But like at the end of the day, you got to push forward because these are human beings that need care, that need help. So even though I'm feeling down because all my friends are dying and it's traumatic, I still have to push forward to help them, to let them know that I'm going to be there no matter what, helping them. And letting them know that someone cares enough to be there for them. Because, like, people on the street, they feel like nobody cares for them, nobody loves them, nobody's there for them. Because you get all these normal people that drive by and say comments or put signs up on top of people saying, do not resuscitate, and stuff like that, that even puts them more under a rock. So for me, even though I'm I feel the effects of my friends dying. I still got to push through that to let them know that someone's still there to help them and someone cares enough to bring them back to life and not watch them die like a lot of other people do in this community.
I was going to mention that Shane and I met through a shared passion for helping that comes partly from us both experiencing personal loss. And I lost my boyfriend to overdose when I was 17 and he was 18. And it was apparently the fifth time that he'd tried. And that's really, it was very tragic for me. And Shane's words he's shared with me are that we don't want other families to go through what we've gone through. That's what motivates us to keep reaching out to their loved ones that they might feel kind of unsure of where to start with. We love to try to help bridge families. I feel very inspired by my friend Jeremy, who is one of the founders of DELF, Drug Users Liberation Front. And when I met Jeremy, he said that he at that point he was looking at going to med school, but he decided to go into public health because this epidemic called to him. And that's how I feel too, that we're in the trenches because we need to be here. There's not enough people that are kind of, we need a lot of us here to keep fighting. It's a very difficult and draining type of work, but I love it. It's extremely fulfilling. Shane and I are so grateful to be able to help that we high five when we're working. And it really, the sadness gives me strength to help, to do whatever we can. We spend a lot of our free time doing it as well so that we can help prevent someone else from, you know, that losing the opportunity to let their light shine and be who they really are underneath all that heavy sedation that occurs through now. What used to, when I started doing this work in Nanaimo, 3% fentanyl would kill you. Now some of the drug result tests are coming back to show like 50% fentanyl plus high levels of benzos, like 65% benzos, plus there's a particular animal sedative, xylazine, that causes these wounds that are like swelling of the hands and things where you're basically being poisoned from the inside. So you can't resolve that type of infection without being on an IV drip or without completely stopping the substance. But there's a lot of stigma that makes going to NRGH for that drip quite challenging for people. And I might let that be a segue to you, Joe, because NRGH is quite a point of contention for people in town here, but it's where we all need to go for help. So we need to support the doctors and nurses who are affected by the large population of individuals going there who are also drug users.
Certainly, I think you're referencing there maybe a lot of discussion in maybe the media and online in the last couple of weeks about a machine outside of NRGH that will distribute various supplies, things like condoms, or a particular point of controversy was that it would distribute pipes that you could use to smoke crack with. What do you make of maybe that whole controversy around that machine?
You can also get a lot of all of that pipe equipment is all available at most of the convenience stores as well. That's one thing that really scares me with youth is it's brightly colored. It's the hospital is very very, they're medical pieces of disposable harm reduction gear, but it's pretty available these days.
I'd say the thing with the hospital, I would say, have they ever seen someone use puddle water to shoot up with or use dirty pipe that they don't know what was used for? Like the stuff that they give at the hospital, it's giving people clean supply instead of them having to reuse the dirty things that potentially get them hepatitis or stuff like that. So for all the people that think we're helping them use, we're giving them a safer way of using and a safe way of maybe staying alive. So people at the hospital, it's tucked around the corner. You can't even see the thing. So I don't know. It's a necessity. There should be more of them out there.
What would you say to maybe a sentiment of that sort of thing is enabling, or people worried that maybe kids would be enabled to start using substances because of a machine like that?
When I first heard about distributing crack kits in the downtown east side, it was you know, it was a little shocking, as was thought of prescribed fentanyl. However, when you become entrenched in the debate or the circumstance, it's so necessary because of what Shane's saying. Like, otherwise we could have a nurse exposed to a needle poke with a dirty needle. So if we're able to provide someone with safe supply who is going to use, because it's not a choice, it's a medical condition, it's a disease that's causing them to be stuck in this loop where they can't access treatment, they can't yet access safe supply. We're helping people stay alive, reducing the risk of overdose by providing some necessities. We're not yet providing safe consumption at the hospital, which is something that many of us really feel is the next step, because that will also protect nurses, the community, from being exposed to smoke that can be drawn out with vacuums. So it's necessary. And since I know we're running tight on time, I just wanted to mention also, I was very inspired by one of my coworkers who's an outreach worker with the Namuk Nation. And she left me with a real heartwarming statement at Overdose Awareness Day, just thinking about, instead of stigmatizing, instead of getting angry if someone relapses or someone uses, thinking about sitting down with that individual, getting down to their level, as Jane always says, helping lift someone up and asking them what's hurting that's causing you to feel the need to numb. And we'll be participating in an event called Spark. That's an Island Health peer focused event this month, and that's been very wonderful with helping us come together as organizers to create solutions.
Heather McDonald and Shane Steinhauer speaking with me to debrief an event held in Nanaimo to mark International Overdose Awareness Day.
People First Radio, People First Media, and People First Stories are community media projects of Vancouver Island Mental Health Society and are produced in Nanaimo, British Columbia. The opinions expressed do not necessarily represent the views of Vancouver Island Mental Health Society or its broadcast, podcast, and social media partners.